RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Zuby is an artist, entrepreneur, fitness coach, and author of the book Strong Advice. He's released several albums independently, gaining fans worldwide through his unique blend of hip-hop and motivational content. Beyond music, Zuby is also a vocal commentator on issues like free speech, political correctness, and the importance of personal responsibility. With a large online presence, he's become a thought leader for many, seeking an alternative voice in today's cultural landscape. And it's my great pleasure to welcome Zuby onto Reality Check Radio, beaming in from Dubai. Zuby, welcome. Great to have you.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for inviting me.
That's quite a lineup there on the CV. And I'm wondering where to start. And I thought thought leader would be a good place to start, because I think that's highly relevant in the times we're living in. And I think people are looking for thought leaders. Is that how you feel? Is that how you see yourself as a thought leader?
Well, that's one of those titles that would be really weird and strange to give yourself. If somebody else calls me that or considers me that way, then I'm not going to push back. If that's how they see me, then I'm happy to expect it. But I have never in my life come out there and explicitly called myself a thought leader, because I think that would feel a little bit pompous. But I'm glad that people are enjoying and finding value in the different types of commentary I'm putting out there, whether that's through my music, through my books, through my podcasting, through social media, through live events, whatever it is. My goal is to uplift and inspire as many millions of people around the world as I can through my words and through my actions. So I'm glad that that is resonating with so many people around the globe now.
And that carries a certain level of responsibility on your shoulders, doesn't it? Really? Yeah. Do you feel that? Do you feel that?
I do feel it. I mean, at this point, I have been doing what I do in some capacity for half of my life, pretty much my entire adult lifetime. I released my first music album when I was 19 years old. I'm now 38 years old. And so it's been pretty much my entire life where I have been working towards this goal. In the past 5 years, a lot more attention has come upon me. Millions of people have discovered me since 2019 through various means. And so I had a lot of preparation prior to that, both in terms of my actual content and my honing my talent and my ability to communicate with people, but also just in terms of dealing with the emotional aspect of it, dealing with the responsibility aspect of it, dealing with the sort of morals and ethics of all of it. So I don't think I can easily be blindsided in the way that someone who's sort of thrust into the spotlight at, I don't know, 17 years old or 21 years old without much preparation can be.
So you're a kind of veteran now, a vet in all of that. When you started out, you know, what was in your heart? Did you know that you were kind of setting a course for, well, something bigger than music, as it turned out, but, you know, a particular direction in life? Or did that just sort of come along on the journey? Just interested, curious to know.
Yeah, sure thing. That's a great question. To be honest with you, it's been clear for me since I was 19 or 20 years old. I don't know exactly what it is. I would say that, if I'm being totally honest, I would say that it comes from God. I've been very clear on what my mission and purpose is on this earth and in my lifetime. And it hasn't happened with the exact timing and along the exact path as I expected. I didn't necessarily think that I would be getting involved in as many different things as I am involved in now. I figured, hey, I want to be a rapper because, number one, I enjoy rapping, but number two, I can use this as a way to influence people in a positive direction. I can get my voice out there, help young people in particular, put out something that's positive, that goes against a lot of the negativity that you see in the world of hip hop and rap and entertainment in general. And that was really my core mission. And I thought that everyone who would discover me through my music. And a lot of people have discovered me through my music and know me through it. But over the course of time, you know, I started my podcast in 2019. I released my first book that same year, started to grow a lot on social media, not primarily through my music, but just from commenting on various things I was seeing happening around the world. And I think that when you speak the truth, then people who speak the truth seek that out, and they resonate with it. And due to the technology and world we're living in now, the borders don't matter. people could be anywhere in the world, and they, you can find and you can discover people who you like, who you trust, who you resonate with, who you have things in common with. And this is the first time in human history people are connected in such a way. And it's got a lot of potential downsides to it, as we see, right? I'm sure everyone listening is familiar with some of the downsides of the social media and smartphones and the internet more widely. But at the same time, with this technology, you can use it in such incredibly positive ways. It's really up to the user to decide how they choose to use it. So like everyone else, you know, sometimes, yep, I can get sucked into a short rabbit hole of negativity for some time, but I'm conscious enough to catch myself doing that and to try to produce more than I consume and to make sure that what I'm producing overall is something that is helpful for people in some way, shape, or form, instead of just spreading negativity or trying to divide people or make them angry when there's already enough things in the world that are doing that.
Help me out with the music, Zuby. So I'm born in the 60s. All my favorite hit songs were through the 70s. A lot of it, black artists from the United States, soul music, I love it. Motown, Earth, Wind, and Fire, all of it. I love it. In fact, I wonder if I've got some kind of gene in there that makes me like it, plus all the rock and roll. Then I see rap come along and it became huge. What is it about, do I call it a musical vehicle of rap, that has made some sort of connection that I didn't see coming in my musical day? And and you being a rap artist, making that sort of music, what's it like making it? A couple of questions there, I know, but if you could unpack those, it'd be great.
Yeah, sure thing. That's an excellent question. And I do a lot of interviews and I've never actually been asked that before. I think what it is with hip hop and rap in particular is I think there are a few things. Number one is I think it's one of the few genres of music where you can make a song, you can talk about absolutely anything. If you think of most genres of music, there is some type of limitation to the type of content and subject matter that the artist can speak about, right? If you're listening to R&B, or if you're listening to soul, or if you're listening to jazz or even pop music, there's some limitation on, like, it would be really weird to make an R&B song about, I don't know, about something outside the realm of love and relationships and everything around that. Yeah, in hip hop, you can make a love song, you can make a song about relationships, you can make a song about absolutely anything. I could make a song about food. I could make a song about politics. I could make a song about going to the gym. I could make a song about just traveling, like just anything. And so there's a lot of freedom. And also in hip hop, you have so many words to rap to work with. So if you look at the amount of lyrics in a typical rap song versus the amount of lyrics in a pop, country, rock song, any other genre, you've probably got, man, anywhere between 4 to 10 times the amount of lyrics. So it's very dense. You can get a lot out. I'd say just a typical rap verse has as many words as a typical song. And so as an artist, you've just got a lot of room for creativity. I think another thing about it is that it's generally a self-taught art. So every rapper tends to come up very much with their own style. You don't go to, you know, no one goes to university to study how to rap. You might learn how to play a violin or how to play a guitar or how to sing.
Yep.
But rap is very much a self-taught art. So it means that each artist, if they're good at it, sort of comes up with their own completely unique style. And it's also one genre where it's massively frowned upon. This is a big one people don't think about. It's massively frowned upon in rap music for someone else to write your lyrics. So typically when you're hearing a rapper rapping, you are hearing what that person is thinking. It's not what some songwriter in the music industry gave them on a sheet of paper to go and create. You're hearing, so there's a level of authenticity to it, which is not as common in other genres, right? You have singer-songwriters who write all their own lyrics, but in many genres, it's not the norm for the artist and the songwriter to be the same person. Whereas in hip hop, if it's not the same person, that's actually frowned upon. So I think that there's this level of authenticity and realness to it, and flexibility and creativity. I think also the fact that it may, you know, singing, this is true of singing as well, but the fact that it doesn't require any external instruments. So your voice is very much the instrument, and you can just, you know, you could kind of do a rap performance anywhere without any, without anything else, right? You could just turn stand up on the street and
you could just
stand on a street corner and you could give a performance. So I think all of these things make hip hop and rap music rather unique in these regards. I don't think most people sort of analyze it that deeply, but as a rapper, to me, certainly these are the things that, you know, both as an artist and as a fan, draw me in particular to that genre.
Fascinating to hear you explain it. Here's a big question. If you were to say it in a sentence or even a word to define the time we're living in now, because to a lot of people, things went from being a predictable normal to a sort of, I think Alex Jones says, the quickening, things sped up. And now we're at what it seems like a crazy time where there's assault on free speech. There's all sorts of weird things happening in the world. We can go through the list, but I think you know what I mean. How would you describe the times, Zuby? Can you think of a word or a phrase or a sentence that sort of nails it?
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, that works.
The two words that jump to my brain are interesting and interconnected.
Right. Okay.
Because I think if you were to look at most of human history, certainly if you were to look at the entire past century, you could have said that at any time.
Yeah.
Right. So I think probably most people in most eras have this sense that they are living through something totally unprecedented, and that, you know, maybe it's even the end times. I can certainly imagine people in the 1920s or 1930s or 1940s thinking all of that, right? And they were, if you go back to World War I, World War II, obviously they were dealing with far more chaos and division and outright nastiness and wickedness than I would say we currently are. And so that's always in the world. You always have the elements of good. You always have the elements of evil. This has been going on for thousands of years since the dawn of humanity, right? War is nothing new, sadly. We all wish it weren't so common, but through the millennia, war is common. Poverty is common. Division is common. Individual and collective wickedness and good are both common. I think what's totally different now is we have such a heightened level of awareness. As I said before, the internet has really disintegrated borders in a lot of ways. I mean, just the fact that we are having this conversation, I mean, you know, 15 years ago, what we're doing right now wasn't possible for us to have this conversation in real time, let alone for other people to be able to hear it. So this, we're just so interconnected. I mean, on my social media platforms altogether, I mean, I have well over 2 million followers at this point. And the fact that I can reach millions of people from a device in my hand.
Yeah.
I mean,
think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When you really think about it, it's exciting and it's cool, but it's also pretty terrifying and it's weird. It's not like we are biologically designed to be connected to that many people and to just have such an awareness. I mean, you're in New Zealand. I'm here in Dubai. You know, we're aware of things that are happening in the UK, all across the USA, different parts of Europe, parts of Asia, parts of Africa. Like we're fully aware of all of this information, and we can, not only do we hear things, but you see it as well, because everyone's not just walking around with a phone. Everyone's walking around with a camera and an HD video camera all the time. And people are able to post things and to share their comments and give feedback. So something can happen quite literally 10,000 miles away from you. And within minutes, you're aware of it. And you can engage in a conversation with people who are on the ground or who are in other nations. And so it's cool and it's exciting, but it's also, it's information overload at the same time.
I was going to ask about that. Does that mean that we can discern still reality, because there are so many inputs and everyone has their take, and a lot of the time now we don't know quite what's real. So,
yeah,
you know, how do you discern? And when you go to make a post to your 2 million followers, I mean, obviously you don't just hit it without thinking, right? I mean, you wouldn't do that. You'd think it through, because there's a lot of power in those words.
Yeah.
I imagine that you think about almost every syllable of what you say because of that, do you?
Yeah, well, there's two questions there. So let me handle the first one. That was about discerning reality. You know, we live in a weird time where something can simultaneously be real and kind of not be. I say this because with both the traditional media and also with social media, they both fall prone to multiple biases. And I've said before that normal life does not go viral. So a typical day in New Zealand or in Dubai or in New York City or in LA, whatever, whichever country, whichever city, that doesn't make the news. That doesn't go viral. People just getting on with life, taking care of their families, going to work, just doing the normal things that make up 99.9% of life. None of that stuff goes viral. But if something crazy were to happen, if something were to, you know, break out in Dubai or in Auckland or in Chicago, wherever it is in the world, if something crazy were to happen or someone were to do something crazy, that's when we see it.
Yeah.
And is that real? Yes, it is real because that incident is actually happening, but it's not representative of what a typical day is or what that city is generally like or what that nation is generally like. So there's a massive negativity and fear bias where we typically, what gets filtered through to us and what people respond to tends to be things that are pretty extreme and pretty polarizing. And so I think people just need to bear that in mind that, yes, this can be a real issue that is going on and is happening. If you are watching a real video from somewhere in the world of something going on, and it, assuming it's not fake and it's not AI, then yes, that is a real thing. But you have to bear in mind that it's also an anomaly. The reason why you're seeing it is because it's an anomaly. If it were normal, you wouldn't even be seeing it. So
yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then answering your second question, you were talking about, can you phrase that second question again? I think it was—
Well, you know, when you go to make a post, you've got 2 million followers. And I'm just thinking, I mean, I don't have that. So, and I don't do much social media. But I can imagine, you know, you want to say something, you know that all those people are going to receive that message. You'd have to be very thoughtful about, like I said, every word that you use. What's your process for that? I take it you don't just randomly fire something off the top of your head, right?
I normally randomly fire things off the top of my head, which is part of why I think people like my platform so much. So at the same time, it's not thoughtless.
Yeah,
I'm a thoughtful person in general. And I think what's important as well is, you know, I don't feel this need to, how would I put it, censor myself or be overly cautious, because in my heart of hearts, I know what my goals and my intentions are. I'm not someone who is, I don't know, harboring some type of hatred, and I have to sort of keep it under wraps to make sure people don't find out about it. Or I'm not someone who's trying to, you know, mislead people in a certain way, and so I need to frame it like this or like that. If something is coming honestly from my heart and from my mind, then the intention behind it is not going to be, it's typically not going to be one of evil, right? If I'm putting it out there, then it's either because I think people are going to find it interesting or entertaining, or they're going to be motivated by it. They're going to learn something. Maybe they're just going to have a little chuckle. Whatever the case may be, the intention is positive. So are there, look, once you have a big following, you also have to accept that there are always going to be people who dislike you and who dislike what you're saying. And it quite literally doesn't matter what you say at some point. I could post a picture of, I don't know, some flowers in a garden or of a very cute puppy or kitten, and there will be somebody out there who has something mean to say about it.
Yeah.
That's just
puppy
how
killer.
It is. And, yeah, exactly, right? You know, how come you posted a puppy but you didn't post a kitten, right?
Yeah.
And you know, why do you hate cats? Why does Zuby hate cats?
Why do you hate cats? Yeah.
Yeah, and so you learn to find the humor in this. Again, I've been on social media for 20 years, which sounds insane to say. I joined Facebook in 2004, and I was on MySpace even before that.
MySpace,
so,
yeah.
And so after a while, you see the patterns, you get used to things, you learn to not take it too personally. And I think overall, you know, I think one of my sort of philosophies is to take life seriously enough to be successful, but not so seriously that you become depressed or angry or anxious. And I try to tread that quite well, right? I take what I do, you know, seriously, and I take my mission seriously, but I also view life like a playground. I view the world as a playground. I see strangers in general as friends that I have not yet met. I like to live a life of adventure, and you know, I have fun with it all, even both online and offline, right? If you take the real world or the internet world incredibly seriously, with no breaks, with no humor, with no joy, with no love, then it's very easy to get angry, to be constantly worried, to be depressed, because there's a lot, Lord knows, there's a lot of reasons to be, and there always will be. But you have to kind of see the humor in it. Even when something bad happens to me, I try to see the humor in it, right? Momentarily, I might be angry, I might be frustrated, I might be annoyed, but there's usually a sort of dark humor to it at the same time, right? Mm. So, you know, I get a lot of people who ask me, I know a lot of fellow creators and, you know, people who are quite influential online and so on. And sometimes, you know, people ask me, oh, you know, this thing happened, how do I deal with it? How do I handle it? Oh, I got this comment. Oh, you know, how should I respond to this thing? And, you know, first question, I'm normally kind of like, why do you care? Right? Like, why do you care? How does this really affect your life? And also, secondly, it's like, can't you, there's typically a funny side to it. Like there's a side to it where you're just like, wow, someone like sat down and decided to write that whole thing out. Isn't that a bit weird? Isn't that a bit strange? You can get mad at it, or you can just sort of chuckle at it and say, well, you know, I guess that's people, that's the internet.
Want to ask you about, it comes from a tweet that I think you made. You said along the lines, removing Christianity from Western culture is like removing a building's foundation. The West is absolutely screwed if it loses Christianity. Mm. A lot of people are, I think it's fair to say, Zuby, are thinking about spiritual things at the moment as they try and sort of work out what they see around them. And is there that dimension to it? So, I mean, it's pretty clear what you said, but how important is, well, religion is one thing, but I don't know, a creator, a God. Do you follow something in your daily life? Is there a voice? I'm always curious to hear from people, particularly people like yourself with all the things you do. What sort of inspiration comes from that direction or anything you want to call it? What comes from that direction?
Yeah, well, I'll speak very plainly. I'm a Christian. I'm a follower of Christ. I do my best to live in the Word and by the Word. Like everybody, I'm not perfect with it. I sin too. We all have our sins. And that's the way I was raised. But as you get older, a faith can, you know, I think typically when people are in their teens or in early adulthood, they tend to make a decision of, Is this my parents' religion or is it my religion? So my parents are both Christian. I was raised in a Christian household. But obviously, as you get older and you get exposed to the world, you have your questions and you do your research and you learn and so on. So I've always been pretty steadfast in my faith. And I would say as the world becomes increasingly crazy in some of the ways that we're talking about, I think it pushes me even more strongly and more deeply into my faith, both on a spiritual level and also on a pragmatic level. I try not to think of it that way because that's not what, I think faith is much deeper than pragmatism. But as I get older, you know, what spurred that tweet that you quoted is just seeing in real time the results of what is going on in multiple Western countries as people become decreasingly godly. And I'm hesitant to even say less religious. I could say that in a traditional sense, but I think what's mostly happening is a lot of people are replacing traditional religion with various types of ideologies and other types of isms. It's not that, you know, I don't think that there can be a vacuum there. There's always going to be a higher motivating force, power, authority that people lean on. In the absence of God, I don't think there can ever be any absence of God because I believe God is real. But in the absence of God in people's minds or in the collective mind, then, you know, what can become the highest power? It can become the self, which can lead to hedonism and nihilism. And we see plenty of that. It can become the state. It can be the government, right? That we've seen that happen many times in history. Okay, you remove God from society, and now all the faith is in the state and in the leaders. And that's where you can get various forms of totalitarian ideology. That could be communism, it could be Nazism, it could be fascism, it could be all of these other things. We've had a lot of talk over the past decade, in particular, over the rise of what people call wokeness or wokeism, which is essentially behaving like a godless religion for millions of people. They're finding their community in it, their morality, their ethics, their heresies. They've got, you know, the things you can say and the things that you can't say. They've got their doctrines. What they lack, though, is salvation, right? It's not a forgiving religion. And I think increasingly people are finding that. Or, you know, people lean heavily into, you know, people could heavily lean into nationalism or race-based identity or gender-based identity. All of these types of things. I don't think, you know, one of my general beliefs is that human beings don't really change. I think we like to think we're totally different from our ancestors, or, you know, we're so different from our grandfathers and great grandfathers and great great grandfathers. We're not. We have the exact same biological wiring. We have the same, we're prone to the same things. The advantages we have are we have better technology and we have access to history. So some of the things we have a better way to determine things that may be right or wrong, because many things have been tried in the past. And so you can typically see the results of those instead of it just being a figment of your imagination or some type of hypothesis. You can see where certain ideas lead. And it seems very clear to me, extraordinarily clear to me, particularly in the West, that the basket of ideas that have been recently popular and that people are adopting are not causing more unity and more love and more kindness. It seems to be going the opposite way. I think there was this belief that, you know, to give the devil his due, there are, you can absolutely make an argument that, hey, you know, and, you know, many atheists would make the argument, hey, religion divides people, people fight wars over religion or mistreat people because of, you know, that. I think that tends to be overshot in the way that they say it, and they tend to ignore all of the gigantic positives that also come from the religions. But, you know, human beings are inherently tribal to some extent. All of us have that within us. I would say that actually religion massively, you know, I'd say Christianity in particular, has been the most powerful unifying force. I mean, in terms of taking people who are of different backgrounds, different nationalities, races, ethnicities, ages, all different walks of life. I mean, you could go to a large church and you will just find people in there who are connected in Christ and in their belief. But they're from, without that, they might be, you know, very, very separated, and they may even hate each other. So how exactly you do the math on these things, I don't know. Someone could do a very deep dive on that. But you know, I believe that human beings are a religious animal. I think even someone who is completely atheistic and totally secular and simply just believes in, you know, evolution and just the pure biology of it, I think they would still have to conclude that, in their words, we have evolved to be religious. That seems obviously clear to me. As far as
Well, everyone has the burning question, right? Zuby, everyone, yes. Doesn't matter who you are. Yes. Whether they admit it or not, there's a burning question that never kind of goes away.
Yeah, I think perhaps 1-2% of the population is like truly, truly, truly capable of being absolutely atheistic. Maybe it's 5%. But I think according to data I've seen, over 90% of people in the world believe in God. And that number is, that percentage is actually increasing. It's not decreasing.
Right.
And as far as I know, that's always been the case. Like religion is not, it's obviously not new. And you know, there are things that people seek. And so, you know, do I believe there are some people out there who are just like, they absolutely can function without any type of core religion or ideology or firm belief system or something? Yes, I believe that those people exist. I also think that they are very rare, and they always will be. And even if you can be like that as an individual, how does it scale to a society? And I think, again, the answer is it doesn't seem to be going all that well. I don't think it's it does not seem to be to me that countries like the USA or Canada or the UK or France or Germany or Australia, that they're doing better and people are happier as a result of declining faith or declining church attendance or declining, like, and it affects everything. It affects people's attitudes towards life itself. It affects people's attitudes towards families and children. It affects people's attitudes towards how they see their neighbor. I think the most radical, you know, everyone's familiar with, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. I think perhaps the most radical commandment in Christianity, the most radical thing Jesus said is to love your enemies.
Yeah,
because that's not something that is normal in nature. I mean, it's normal to, you know, love your neighbors and your family, but hate your enemies. That's the thing that seems more logical. So this commandment that you should love enemies and pray for people who persecute you, it's not easy. It's not easy to do. It's not easy to always be forgiving. Like, we have a tendency to want to hold grudges and to hold resentments. But the less forgiving we become and the more hostile and nasty we become towards each other, and the more that we forget our commonality and we start falling along the lines of, I don't know, it could be race, it could be gender, it could be social class, it could be all of these other ways that you can divide humanity. It seems that people fall into these other types of tribalism. And so, and I see plenty of that going on. So,
yeah.
That's a long-winded answer, but
no, it's a great answer.
These are the ideas behind that thought.
Yeah, it's like forgiveness. You mentioned forgiveness. It's like a superpower in a way, isn't it? That's how I kind of think of it. And that you mentioned it reminded me of that. I want to ask you about men, because it seems to me that the role of men has kind of changed in the Western world anyway, seems to be a shift in what is a man. And I'm thinking, asking you this, because I know you've spoken to some, you know, very high achieving men. I'm thinking of Elon Musk, Andrew Tate, and others that you've had on podcasts, etc. So you've been able to talk to them, pick their brains. Where do you think men are in this day and age? And do you think that males not being as manly as they should be has something to do with what is happening in the world right now? Or is there too much toxic masculinity driving things? What are your thoughts about men for our male listeners, Zuby?
Sure.
And female listeners.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. There's a lot we could get into here. Well, first of all, I think toxic masculinity, I hate that phrase, but I think toxic masculinity is driven by an absence of righteous masculinity. When I see what people call toxically masculine behaviors, it's typically from an absence of masculinity rather than too much of it, right? What do I think about where men are? I don't think collectively men and boys are in a great situation. I think in terms of health, in terms of economics, in terms of spiritual well-being, in terms of relationships and marriage and fatherhood and all of these things, they have all sadly declined. You know, we're in a really strange time in developed countries where a lot of progress has been made in certain ways over the decades. I think that's undeniable. But at the same time, there have been many regressions in terms of the things that help to create and maintain a healthy, stable society with healthy, stable individuals. I mean, the testosterone rates are dropping by about 1% per year, which is very worrying. Sperm counts are dropping by about 1% per year. It's not known. I'm sure there are many reasons for this, but even collectively, it's not known exactly why all of that is happening, but that's not a good sign. The marriage rates are decreasing. The number of people who feel some type of depression or hopelessness is increasing. We know that in many developed countries, the leading or one of the leading causes of death for men, young men in particular, is suicide. It's death by their own hands. I mean, if you really think about that say a man in the UK, the most dangerous person or thing to him statistically is himself.
Yeah,
I think
wow.
That's very deep, right? We were talking before about the spiritual aspect of things. And to me, that's, for lack of a better term, that's a clear sign of a massive demonic attack that is going on. Someone can take that literally or they can take it metaphorically, but there's some real evil going on there. I think speaking practically, I think something that is confusing for a lot of young men is just knowing what their role is supposed to be. For better or for worse, right? People could argue all day long about the gender roles and whether gender roles are good or bad or to what degree they should exist. But in most of the world, certainly in developing countries and through pretty much all of history, gender roles were fairly well defined. So if you were a young man or a young woman growing up in the 500s, 1500s, 1800s, 1900s, like it was pretty clear what your role in society was. It was pretty clear how you should behave, the type of things you should pursue, what your timeline should be, and so on. Are there some restrictions and limitations that can create? Yes, of course. But we're now living in a time where on paper, both men and women have more options than ever before. But having more options, I mean, I'd say the options are actually more restricted than people may think they are. But always having more options doesn't make people more happy or more satisfied. And it certainly doesn't make a society more functional. If we are going to be playing a game, then it's useful to have some guidelines and some rules and some examples. And another thing that happens, I see this a lot with messages men are receiving, is they're often very contradictory. So at the same time, men are receiving a message to man up and a message to man down.
Right. Yeah.
So if you are, I don't know, if you are a 16
How do you do that?
Or 17, yeah, if you're a 16 or 17 year old boy and you're kind of just growing up in one of these nations, and on one hand, you're being told to, you know, hey, you know, be a man and, you know, take responsibility and protect and provide and, you know, treat women in a good way. And, you know, you've got these fumes of chivalry, which are still expected. If you want to take, you know, a basic example, right? Most young women, even ones who call themselves feminists, still think the man should pay for the date.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah.
And then out the other side of the mouth, it's all the equality talk and 50-50 talk and, you know, maybe I don't even need a man and so on. And so, you know, I could see how a young guy could be like, what am I supposed to do here? Am I meant to be the protector and the provider and that strong masculine man? Or am I meant to, is that toxic? And should I, you know, make space for women and sort of step down and step back and let these other people step in? It's just that, the messages are very contradictory. I think in the West, there's still a strong foot in there. It's like the right foot is in traditionalism and chivalry and, you know, sort of traditional gender roles. And then the left foot is in feminism and egalitarianism and everything must be 50-50. And, you know, men aren't really necessary. And if they are, then we're all kind of bad. So I just think the messaging is very confused and people don't really know, maybe people don't even really know what they want. And there is some type of, even if you just look at the labor people do now, there is some sort of gender homogenization that has naturally taken place because increasing numbers of people are not doing manual labor, right?
Yeah,
they're not building, they're not farming, they're not constructing. If you look at, let's go back to basics. Look, you look at the male body and you look at the female body, and it's obvious that we are built to handle different things. There are obvious things women can do that men cannot. Give birth to children, breastfeed. There are things men can do that women cannot. We're physically bigger, we're stronger, our bones are thicker, we can, you know, lift heavier weights and build more things. But if I look at the work that I do, a woman could do the work that I do. I'm a big, strong man, but I don't in terms of my day-to-day life, I don't really use it that much, right? I make podcasts, I make songs, I perform, I talk on stage, I write books. A woman could do all of those things. If I existed 100 years ago or 200 years ago, I would probably be doing some type of labor that is really using my physicality and that only I and mostly other men would be capable of. So I think as we now increasingly work on computers and on screens and online, that natural division has decreased somewhat. And so that sort of plays into it all. There are so many different factors out there, which is why, you know, and each of them is a really interesting conversation in itself. But yeah, I just think that, yes, men have been actively diminished. I think one more thing that I'll touch on right on this point is that I think it's certainly true that over the last few decades, there's been a massive feminist and egalitarian push, particularly as I can see in the last 60 years. And I have said before that you can uplift a group of people without tearing down another one. But people seem to forget this sometimes. So I think in the pursuit, I have my own thoughts on this. I don't necessarily believe it's all altruistic and benevolent. But through the, let's say, noble push to uplift girls and women, there's been a lot of demonization of boys and men and masculinity throughout that entire process. Some of it is quite obvious and some of it is quite subtle, but it's in all of the media that we've been growing up with. It's in certain political agendas. It's in certain laws and policies or rules. And so I think a lot of men feel diminished in a way. And society says that, hey, that's fine, because again, collectively as a society, we still have the sort of desire and mechanism to prioritize females over males. And there are biological reasons for that. That's something that has always existed, right? You could argue that women have always been more protected than men are.
Women and children first.
Exactly. And I'm not mad at that. But what is confusing is, like I said, it's the mixed messaging. It's the flipping from this one to this one, back to this one, back to this one, depending on whatever is sort of expedient at the time. So I'm totally happy with women and children first. I don't think that men and women should be treated identically. I think we should be treated fairly, and I think we should be treated as individuals. And I think there should generally be equal opportunities to the extent that that's possible. But when you deny the differences, in the long term, it doesn't make either sex happy. Women don't seem to be all that happy with this arrangement in general. Men are not all that happy with this arrangement. And, you know, you don't have to abide by it. But due to even things like economic factors, It still impacts people. So let's say there's a young couple who do want to pursue a more traditional path, right? They want they want to have a lot of kids, and you know, they want the woman to stay home with the children and work in the home, and the man to go out and be the breadwinner. That is still possible, but it's far more difficult than it used to be.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? So this is what I mean kind of by the illusion of choice. So you've actually decreased the probability and the availability of certain choices. And so we're in this weird zone where there are plenty of women out there. I don't know how many millions of women must be out there, hundreds of millions, maybe a billion plus, who would rather not be in the workplace. They'd rather not be in the office, or whatever it is. But they feel, yes, they feel like they have to, right?
Enslaved to it. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. They need the dual income. And there's many men who would like to be, hey, I'd love to be able to earn enough to take care of my wife and three kids just by myself. But, you know, financially, economically, it's just really hard to do. Even logistically, it's really hard to do. Whereas in the past, it was a lot easier. So, yeah, you know, trade-offs. I guess that's the kind of the bottom line, trade-offs.
That was brilliant. Look, we're coming up against time. I've got to ask you, because it's only about 30 or so days away, and it's male versus female, ultimately. I'm talking about the U.S. election. Any thoughts on that? October surprises? How do you think that will go, all being equal? Is it ever equal? I don't know.
Yeah, I actually just came back. I just came back from Washington, D.C. I spent a month in the U.S. I was in a few different states. It's hard to make predictions. I do really think on this one, it's about 50-50. And with a month to go, I mean, if you just look at how many crazy things have happened in the last couple of months, I mean, one side has changed the candidates. There have been two assassination attempts on one of the candidates and a former president. Who knows what's going to happen in the next 30 days? I don't know. To me, it's 50-50. I would not be surprised with either result. If Trump wins, I would not be surprised. If Harris wins, I would not be surprised. I think a lot of it will come down to just, I think a lot of it might just come down to how people feel on the day.
On the day,
How people feel on the day. And maybe even what some of the rules are regarding things like the mail-in ballots and stuff like that, because that's quite a change, and it even changes the demographics of who votes. So I don't know. I will be observing from a distance. I'm not American, so I don't have a say in it either way, but I'll be watching with curiosity.
Zuby, it's been great to chat with you on Reality Check Radio. Thanks for beaming in all the way from Dubai. It's been really interesting listening to what you've been saying. I hope it was good for you. And we'll keep an eye on the posts and what you have to say. And folks, you can, just to let you know, you can check Zuby out, zubymusic.com, X Zuby Music, and YouTube Zuby Music. Thanks again. It was a really interesting chat. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.